Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.
Good morning. How's it going? Welcome to a bright and early edition of the Chronicles of a Gooner, the Arsenal podcast, part of the 90 Min Football Network. We are live on the YouTube channel. And if you're listening on audio, then please do leave us a review. If you're watching us live, jump in the comments, get involved in the discussion, leave a like on the video, and of course, subscribe to the channel. Bit of a mid-season review coming your way. Arsenal have played exactly half of their Premier League games this season. And you could say we're halfway to achieving something that would be incredible. Alongside me to kind of break down what it is that is simply so much better about Arsenal this season, to make some comparisons to the seasons that have gone by, and to try and put our finger on exactly why Arsenal are a much better outfit than the one that finished fifth last season. Alongside me is the brilliant Mike Stavrou, dressed as though he's going for war. Mike, that looks a very warm piece of attire. I like it.
You know what, man? Like, it is just so cold in my flat. It's really hard to heat up. So I wear about 3-4 layers. Today, this is scaled back, actually. Usually it's a lot more layers, man.
Well, good to see you anyway, man. It's been a little while. I know you're a very, very busy man these days. Let's say a few quick hellos to people joining us in the live chat. Big hello to Owen, who I had the pleasure of meeting the other day. Really nice guy, top guy. Great lad. Great to see you. And good to see you in the chat, mate. Hope you're well. Daniel, Nav, Omar is in the chat, and it's Omar's birthday. So happy birthday, Omar, regular listener / viewer of the podcast. Hope you have a great day, mate. Big hello to Adam, who says he's a long time listener, but it's the first time he's with us live. He says, come on, you Gunners. We've also got Derek in the chat, and Danish Islam, who says, very important to have the mentality to stay humble. Yeah, I think, look, if we're being honest, we're all staying humble at the moment. I don't know about you, Mike, but I'm not getting carried away. We say halfway to achieving something special because we're at the halfway point, but it doesn't mean that we're going to finish the job, unfortunately. Saswat says, would have guessed dressed as DJ Khaled, but war is fair, I guess. So, Mike, you do look a bit like DJ Khaled with that jacket, to be fair. And the beard.
I mean, hopefully not weight-wise. I mean, that's a huge dig. That is a huge dig. I much prefer war rather than DJ Khaled.
I bet you'd rather have his wallet than yours, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, let's do this then. Mike, first up, before we dive into some stats and facts and stuff to kind of back up the points we're making, which Mike has done some incredible work on in the build-up to this show. How are you feeling at the moment? Because I was very much saying to people, ask me after the North London derby and the game against Manchester United. Ask me at that point if I thought that Arsenal could go on and win the Premier League. I don't want to get carried away. I don't want to get too excited. But every test we seem to have come up against so far this season, we've managed to pass it with flying colours. And so at some point, you've got to start to believe, right? I mean, where are you on this?
Yeah, I think I started to believe after the first half of the North London derby, when we absolutely dominated Spurs. I thought we were, you know, imperious, really, considering, you know, how derbies away at Spurs have gone before. The fact that we started this game, like, in full flow, You know, really showed off our strengths. And one of the things we're going to pick out later in the stats is our possession line, possession one line, and how brave we were in winning the ball basically on the halfway line. You know, against Spurs, a team that can hurt you on the counter-attack, and we knew that, but we still said, you know what, we believe in our game. And I think it wasn't so much to do with a points tally. It wasn't so much to do with, you know, going clear of Man City, which we did, but it was more from a mental standpoint. And I think, you know, beating your rivals in that fashion, obviously I know they got back into it in the second half, but beating your rivals so emphatically, and there's a really interesting sort of comparison between Spurs and Arsenal right now. I mean, we spoke about it before, the North London derby, but you know, we're a team that's basically built a project from the ground up with a young manager, a very young squad. And that's what Spurs did with Pochettino. And they had a young team, they had a young manager, you know, with it, they put exciting football, and they got, you know, arguably at this stage further than us, because they went on to get to the Champions League final. And what they've done is done the inverse and gone sort of backwards by hiring managers like Nuno and Conte and Mourinho. So they're actually looking at us right now saying, you know, Arsenal are the blueprint for what a project should be. And it just shows, and it's a moral win for football, really, because with all these clubs backed by, you know, these Gulf states and Saudi Arabia, and, you know, there's talks about Qatar, you know, wanting to get an investment in a Premier League club. This is a moral win for football, because we've shown how to do it without much money. I know, obviously, there's been big signings like Jesus and Zinchenko, and, you know, Thomas Partey cost a lot of money, and Ben White and Ramsdale. But compared to, like, Chelsea, compared to, you know, what Man United has spent, Man City, we're doing it on a much lower level. So, I think really, like, mentally, we're in a good spot, and it's just about keeping it going. And obviously, like, I've not asked myself this question yet, but I'll ask you, but if we were not to win it now, obviously I'd be devastated, because it's a huge, huge opportunity, but I wouldn't say, like, you can't say, oh, like, you can't be absolutely, like, gutted and say it's all a disaster, because we've done so well to get to where we are.
I think you can be gutted at the time. I think the emotion of missing out narrowly would be difficult to take at that point, and that will naturally lead to people reacting in a very raw way. You know, you would get people that, you know, feel angry, disappointed, frustrated. But I think you're right. When the dust settles, you would have to look back at it and say, this was still an incredibly successful season. You know, if you get pipped by Manchester City by a handful of points because they put an amazing run together, and maybe our inexperience shows or a lack of depth in certain areas comes back to bite us, then you go, okay, you know, that's just the way football goes sometimes. But anything, I'm at the point now where anything below like a second place finish would be a disappointment for me. Mm. And it's taken me a long time to sort of acknowledge that shift, because I'm very much the type of person that says at the start of the season, if this is your ambition and this is your goal, this is what you should be aiming for. And if you achieve that, you've had a successful campaign. Because I always feel like you can get caught up in moments, you can get caught up in circumstances, and you can get carried away by circumstances when it doesn't always paint the real picture of your team. For example, you know, this season where Arsenal have been flying in the way that they have, it's not because the teams around us are crap. We've been in title races before in the Emirates era where that was more of a consequence of the rest of the league not being up to standard rather than us being that good. I mean, if you think about the year Leicester won it, you know, if you look at the points tally and you compare it to where Arsenal are at now, for example, you'll see that actually Leicester's position, and I'm not taking anything away from them, they've done an incredible job. But the point I'm trying to make is that that was a byproduct of teams around them not being up to scratch.
Yeah.
And the reason we felt that we were in the race that year was not because we were ready to win a title, but it was because it was Leicester that were leading the charge, and you felt that they were catchable, and you felt that they would have that blip. So this time it's not like that. This time you look at it, you look at Arsenal's record, which we're going to come on to in a minute, and it is nothing short of fantastic. Arsenal were there this time on merit. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes. Let's go on then to break some of this down. Let's bring up some stats and facts that Mike has very kindly pulled for us. So, Mikel Arteta's first full season in charge, the 2020-21 season. We played 38 matches, obviously, won 18, but we lost 13 times, Mike.
Yeah.
Inconsistency is probably the word that I would use to describe that season. And I know there were a few things in there. We'll come on to do like an overall review of the three seasons that we're looking at. But I know inconsistency is the word for me that kind of summarizes this.
Yeah, inconsistency, not only with performances, but with players, with the, as we'll see as well, you know, the difference in the lineups, Harry. The fact that, you know, sometimes we'd play three at the back with Kieran Tierney at left centre back or Ser Kolasinac at left centre back. And, you know, I mean, when you compare those, the squad we had then, the squad we had now, it's night and day. But yeah, some of the things just on this screen that really stand out to me is crosses. Like, and I remember like reviewing like early Arteta, me and you talking and saying, you know, Kieran Tierney is our only outlet in attack. And that was that, like the literal game plan, it seemed like from the outside, was to get the ball to Kieran Tierney and cross it. And that's why you see so many crosses. So yeah, it's just, it really has developed. And I think it's in the reason we're doing this is because it's really important to look back and see how far we've come. Another thing that stands out there is red cards, like five red cards. Is, you know, it speaks of a team of ill discipline and a team that and, you know, they can lose their heads, and you've got players who are maybe liabilities, and there's so many things I think that were wrong at that time, not only, you know, with Arteta's team and his selection, his tactics, but stemming from the culture and the tactics of managers like prior, you know, Emery and Wenger as well.
Yeah, absolutely. If we take it on then to the 2021-22 season, which was last season, where Arsenal finished fifth, a lot more consistent, but still not consistent enough. Matches played 38, 22 wins, 13 losses, not that many draws, just a handful of draws, but we were losing way too many games.
Yeah.
In that season, goals conceded 48, way too many. Goals scored 61 is not massive, is it? It's not something to really shout about. Right. Kept a fair few clean sheets, but again, you know, there's a lot of things in there. You know, again, the crosses thing is quite high, as you pointed out in your notes. It's just, I don't know, it was better, but it wasn't an awful lot better, was it? It was progress, but not that much progress.
No, it was slow progress. And I think, I mean, we were still asking, weren't we, in this season, what's the sort of style of play? And we still weren't really seeing it at times. I think we saw a sort of shell and what Arteta maybe wanted to do and was building towards. But I wouldn't say it's until about the second half of the season where we really saw, okay, this is how we want to play and we're going to do it, right, regardless of if we've got players fit or if not. Because like even just looking back to the North London derby last season, I think, which we might look at, you know, we had like Rob Holding and Cedric starting in defence. And so that's clearly like not, if you look at Arteta's style of play now, like them players are clearly just like not up to standard, are they? And I think that's why we brought in that new centre back as well, because we're kind of saying, you're right, we need to come and move it on. And that's why Cedric looks like he's going to Fulham. So it is sort of, you know, it's what Arteta had to work with at that time. And, you know, we were close to Champions League, but not quite enough. But I would say still, like between the season we just looked at and this season, you know, it was a jump up. We finished eighth and then we finished fifth. So there was improvement. It wasn't like, you know, in your face like it was this season, but there was still, you could see signs of it.
Yeah, you could see the shoots, couldn't you, of it
growing.
And then you take it on to this season where we've played 19 games so far, 16 wins on the board, just the one defeat, 45 goals scored, which is almost what we, if you're, I take it back a second, goals, where is it? Goals, 61 goals last season.
Yeah, I mean.
And we've hit 45 already, and we're only halfway through.
Yeah.
Goals conceded is pretty low as well. Nine clean sheets from the nine. I think that the clean sheets could have been a little bit higher based on the results that we've got, if I'm being honest. But especially against the bigger sides, the Liverpools, the Uniteds, the, you know, generally speaking, we've conceded goals in the home games, haven't we? Where you'd ideally like not to, but obviously these are top teams as well. But you just look at that and you can see it's worlds apart. And what you did, Mike, was pull together some kind of key talking points from these sort of these statistics. So I'll let you take them on.
Yeah.
Talk to us about them.
Yeah, so the goal scored, which you picked out, you know, 10 behind 2020-2021. And, you know, we're halfway through the season. So we played, you know, 19 less games. And then again, you know, it's not even, it's a huge difference as well between the last season as well, 16 behind. And also goals per match as well is way up. So it just shows, you know, the attack is clicking. And I think obviously... the big difference in that is pushing so many more players forward, because we've got that competent back five now of the four defenders and then Thomas Partey in front. They're so solid, they're so organized, they're so compact. It allows the five attackers to come into play, because I think what we saw in previous seasons was we were attacking with, let's just say, Alexandre Lacazette, Martinelli, Saka, and Odegaard. But it was those four. But then, you know, because Lacazette dropped so deep, you wouldn't really see that many players in the box. Odegaard sort of hovered on in a number 10 position as he does. Martinelli and Saka they're still not players that really get into the box and try and get on the end of crosses, are they? So the difference you're seeing now, and I've noticed it in recent games, but the amount of players that we have in the box, like, it's not only those five attackers, but sometimes you'll see the fullback get in there, like Tomiyasu, I saw against when he came on against United, was getting in the box. And on the other side, Zinchenko might not get in the box, but he's on the edge, and you'll have 5-6 players in the box. So obviously that's going to improve your chances of scoring, and it allows, you know, Odegaard to say, okay, well, I don't need to be in the box, but I can hover around, and if there's a chance, I can get in there. So another thing is penalties. We're way less reliant. I did make the cheeky point, less decisions going our way. I don't know. We can debate that one. The crosses was one I picked out, because, as I said earlier, you know, we don't really do meaningless crosses now. We don't do hopeful crosses.
But that's because we've got a plan. That's because we've got an idea now. I think
exactly.
I don't think there was ever a point where Mikel Arteta went, I want my team to put the ball in the box early all the time, in the way that Sean Dyche would or Sam Allardyce would. There was clearly an issue with creativity, and the default for somebody like Kieran Tierney when he gets into that area is to put the ball in the box early. And I actually think that, you know, we're going to come on to compare Tierney and Zinchenko a little bit later on, but I actually think that was Kieran Tierney's default action when he gets into those positions, and it just didn't work for us. And so we were looking at it and we were going, well, Kieran Tierney's the only one that gets forward. He's the only one that gets into, you know, those types of positions, but when he gets there, what he's doing with the ball is actually not leading to an awful lot. And I think that was a problem or a byproduct of a wider creativity issue. But you're right to highlight that, because the number of crosses has dropped dramatically. Now you see Arsenal get to the byline and cut the ball back. Now you see Arsenal play in the half spaces. Now you're seeing Arsenal, you know, with a real idea and a pattern to their play. I don't know if you saw it. There was a clip going around of Mikel Arteta sort of giving like a kind of coaching seminar a little while back, when he was talking about how you progress the ball in the wide areas. Because what a lot of fullbacks do is play it down the line to their winger.
I saw that.
Do you see it? Yeah. It brings it under control and then can't go inside, can't turn anywhere because the fullback's marked him well. And then you end up with them having to play the ball back or in field, and you're essentially starting again. And what he highlights is that if you put a slightly different angle on the pass, if you make your way as a fullback into a slightly more inverted area, you attract the attention of the defender, which allows you the space to then play it wide and give that winger more chance to kind of beat his man and get to the danger zone. So really interesting stuff. And just watching that alone highlights the level of sophistication in Mikel Arteta's coaching. You know, it highlights how meticulous he is.
I saw the same thing as you, but it's weird because I saw a bit later on as well, when he was also talking about the wingers getting the ball, but he was talking about the body shape of the wingers when they receive the ball. So if they receive it with their back to goal, all they're going to get is the left back or the fullback, you know, pushing up on them, trying to nick it in front of them or just going into the back of them. And, you know, that can win you a foul, but ultimately, you know, you're going to get the ball and you're going to have to do something, you know, out of the ordinary to try and have your back to goal and then spin around and beat the defender or just pass back to your fullback on midfielder. But if you receive the ball on the half turn, like Saka does all the time, he receives it in a way that in about two or three touches, he can be past the fullback, or he can then come inside and drive infield as he done so well. And that's something that Arteta teaches. So it is interesting, like all these little tactical tweaks that we see. And we saw it with him at Man City as well. And there was a video on the training ground of him telling Sterling to do a particular run into the box. And I think that in the next game or the next few games, Sterling actually did what Arteta told him and he scored. So obviously he knows what he's doing with wingers, especially. He's got a very good know-how with attacking play.
Yeah, for sure. We mentioned clean sheets. I mentioned that I thought that given the results we've had so far this season, that the number of wins that we probably could have had a few more. And I think that's me probably nitpicking because of the standards that we've set so far this season. But as you rightly point out, we're only three away from the 2020-21 total. So again, real sign of progress there.
Yeah. And this, you know, I agree with you because there is 16 goals conceded. And 9 clean sheets. So you would expect maybe a few more there because there's been a lot of games where we've like the Leicester game way at the beginning of the season, you know, we threw away 2 stupid goals. I think William Saliba scored an own goal. So there have been times where we've sort of just given opposition a goal here or there.
Brighton, I know we won the game, but we kind of allowed Brighton to come back into the game.
And that should have been a clean sheet. It should have. But I mean, I think we've sort of sharpened up on that, but it would be nice to keep a few more clean sheets. Just goals conceded per match way down, tackle success, and most if you look at those defensive metrics, I mean most of them are way up on previous seasons, which is obviously great. And discipline as well, Harry. That's a big one. Zero. Yeah, the Premier League they're trying to give us red cards, you know, because on the Premier League graphic it says. It says one red card. I was like, I was trying to think, when was the red card? But there isn't one.
No, there I know. I when you sent this across, I looked at it and I went, red card?
Yeah.
No, who was the red card against? And I've looked on a couple of other websites and I can't see who that red card was for. So I think it's wrong as well.
Yeah,
I can't think of one in the league. I don't know. No. I can't think of one.
But, you know, zero red cards. In 19 games, but then, you know, 5 red cards in 2020-2021 and 4 in the following season. You know, that's only Premier League. There was other games where we were getting red cards as well. Did Xhaka get sent off against Liverpool in the League Cup, was it? I don't know. I might be wrong on that, but I know there was a red card. There's been red cards in Cups and Europa League, not so much. But this is only Premier League. It just showed, as I said earlier, a bit of ill discipline. I think Xhaka was probably responsible for a lot of those. Xhaka and Gabriel, I think those two can be quite rash, but they've both worked on their game. And it shows individual improvement, Harry, but it shows collective improvement because we're not leaving players in positions where they have to make rash challenge. It was Xhaka against Jota, I remember. Do you remember? He sort of, Jota was through on goal and he went in, jumped into him. That could have been Premier League, but I remember
that was Carabao Cup. That's Carabao Cup.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. We're not leaving players in them positions as much as we were. I remember the Wenger days, and we used to play like a high line with Per Mertesacker and Koscielny, and then we used to wonder why we used to get so many red cards. Well, it was like because one ball over the top, and the team were basically in on goal, and you know you're gonna have to bring them down, or otherwise you're gonna concede. So we're not doing, you know, we're not putting our players in positions where they're going to get red cards. And also as well, you know, when you've got so much of the ball, when you're dominating matches, when you're winning matches, there's no need to jump in and you know, really try and make a 50-50 tackle and with a high boot or anything like we would have done before. So yeah, it's a huge improvement. Massive.
Yeah, it is indeed. A few people pointing out that Gabriel was sent off at Leeds and then that was overturned. Do you remember where he was adjudged to have kicked out the player? And then, but that shouldn't be included in the Premier League statistics because the card was overturned.
It's not a red card, though.
It's nonsense, isn't it? The agenda against Arsenal is real. It really is. Let's take it on then. Let's have a quick look at the team that finished the season on the 26th of July, 2020. This was one of the seasons in which we finished eighth, but this will just kind of highlight the evolution of the team in that period of time. It was Martinez in goal. I don't know why he's got D Martinez. Has he got some different name that we don't know about apart from Emiliano?
I don't know. That's a good question.
But anyway, Maitland-Niles was at right back. For the benefit of those of you listening, Holding, Luiz and Tierney made up the rest of the defence. Xhaka and Ceballos were in midfield. Pepe played from the right, Aubameyang from the left, and Willock was playing in behind Alexander Lacazette, who was leading the line that day. If you look at that now, only, you know, in terms of starting lineup, only Granit Xhaka remained because Kieran Tierney is not the first choice left back anymore. Rob Holding is still in the squad, but is exactly that squad player. Aubameyang's gone, Lacazette's gone, Willock's gone, Pepe is out on loan, but highly doubt he'll return. Ceballos has gone, Luiz has gone, Martinez has gone, Maitland-Niles is out on loan as well, but another one I don't think is going to return. So when you look at that and then you compare that to the side that played Manchester United just the other day, I mean, it's worlds apart. So it just goes to show, doesn't it, that sometimes for you to put the team in place that you want, when you don't have the crazy finances, and I'm not saying we're poor, right? I'm not sitting here claiming that we're a poor football club and, you know, we've got to do things in a really savvy way. We have to make the best of what we've got. Our resources are greater than most clubs, to be fair, because of our size and stature. But, I mean, look at the turnaround in the squad. This doesn't happen overnight, Mike.
I mean, there's two things there that's really interesting, is that from that first team, how many of them players did we get rid of that we actually got like a bit of money back for? So obviously Ceballos was alone, so that doesn't count. Maitland-Niles is still there. Pepe's still there. But, you know, Aubameyang left on free. Lacazette left on free. David Luiz left on free. Martinez, we got 10, 15 million, something like that. So that was not too bad. Willock, we got a bit of money for. But, you know, it just highlights the point that we were doing business in a way that's not sustainable, because we didn't actually have lots of sellable assets. I mean, Pepe, we bought for 70 million. We'd be lucky to get 15 million back, really. So it just shows you,
I'd
you know,
be surprised if we got that. If I'm honest.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I've not really kept up with how he's doing on loan, but I know that he's not doing anywhere near as well as like Folarin Balogun, who we could get money for because he's smashing the goals in. Yeah, but yeah, and then the second thing is you actually look at the front three, Harry, and you look at the ages, and you've got Pepe, Lacazette and Aubameyang. Let's take Willock out of the equation for a minute. You know, Aubameyang and Lacazette, highly experienced players. Pepe, he's about 24, 25. And then you look at the front three that beat United, and it's Saka and Nketiah Martinelli. I tweeted the other day, they've got a combined age of 65. You know, that's almost 10 years younger than Arsene Wenger. and most importantly, cost 6 million. The only player we had to pay for there was Gabriel Martinelli from the Brazilian league. So, you know, that's not a team that's cost us a lot of money. It's a front three that we've built ourselves with our academy, and that's absolutely fantastic that we're using that and utilizing that. And then it's a player that we've plucked out of thin air, really, from you know, from the great scouting network that we've got. So we need to do more of that, because we're a club that, like I said earlier, are not going to spend the money that Man United, Man City, you know, all of them teams play. Like, we can't. We went and we needed a backup wing on. We went out and got Leandro Trossard. We didn't spend 70 million on 80 million on Mudryk, or, you know, we can't do what Man City do, where we've got a £50 million player as backups in every position. We're not in a position to do that. So we've been really smart about it. And, you know, I hope it continues.
And we've had to be patient as well. And that's something that you need to give the club credit for, because it would have been very easy, given the pressure that was being applied by certain sections of the fan base, to replace Mikel Arteta and rip this process/plan up and throw it in the bin, you know, ages ago. But you look at some of the players like that are on the screen now. So this was the team that played Man United, just for the benefit of those listening. Ramsdale in goal, White, Saliba, Gabriel, Zinchenko, Odegaard, Partey, Xhaka, Saka and Ketia, Martinelli. The reason I talk about patience here is because William Saliba, okay, a player that we obviously signed for quite a big amount of money when you consider what he'd achieved in his career up until that point. But it wasn't a ready-made solution for us. We had to be patient with him. We had to send him out on loan. You know, he went back to St. Etienne. After that initial loan spell ended, Arsenal still weren't sure that he was ready. He had that spell at Nice. And then, of course, he went to Marseille. And now he's come back and is a player that is ready to help us. So we've had to be patient. Now, that was a signing made pre-Mikel Arteta. But it's one that he's looked at and gone, you know, just because it's not my signing.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Doesn't mean I'm going to distance myself from this guy or cut him loose or insist that he doesn't play, but I need to give him the time to develop and grow into the player that I want him to be. You know, so that's one example of patience. Bukayo Saka, he's been impressive since he burst onto the scene, but he's never been at this level that he's showing now. We've given him time in that position. And there have been inconsistent patches in which his form has dropped off a little bit over the course of his journey. But that's, again, part and parcel of it. Eddie Nketiah, patient. Give him time. Give him the right coaching. And look at what he's bringing to the table now in Jesus's absence. Martinelli wasn't the player, wasn't the player that he is today a year ago, even a year and a half ago. And Martin Odegaard, Mike, brought in on loan, did okay. You know, last season was pretty good. But again, you give him that patience, you give him that time, and look at the player we have lining up for us week in, week out now. So there's had to be, as well as spending, as well as turning the team around, as well as getting people out the door that were stinking out the place, if we're being honest, we've had to be patient in so many ways as well. And now we're reaping the rewards for that. I mean, I think that's kind of all I want to say on the sort of team evolution. And you obviously pointed out as well that at times we played three at the back during Arteta's first season. Now, I think looking back on that, is it fair to say that that was something he did because he felt it was necessary as opposed to it being what he wanted?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was, I think it was a case of getting through with what you have. And really trying to hone down on getting that defense right first, because like under Emery, not only couldn't we attack, but we were a defensive mess. So Arteta went in there and said, okay, I need to sort out one thing. I can't do both at the same time. So he went defense first, tried to create a solid foundation. Didn't always work, but you know, I can see why he would have done that, just to stop the rot a little bit. And obviously, you know, the one thing, the huge thing he did in his first year was get the FA Cup. And that afforded him a lot more time. Had he not won that, I don't know, would Arsenal have bowed to fan pressure, media pressure? Would they have, you know, pulled the trigger and got rid of him? I don't know. It's possible. But they kept faith. They obviously saw what he wanted to do and saw the players that he needed that we've just discussed to bring in to allow him to play that style of play. And it's worked. And as I say now, like our style of football, it's the best in the league by far, I would say. We're not as like robotic as Man City are. I think Man City with Haaland have actually got worse stylistically. They've not got worse as a team in terms of output, but you know, when you replace the sort of false nine that they were playing, you know, they played Raheem Sterling, Phil Foden, you know, it's a lot easier on the eye than a guy who sort of sticks up front, doesn't really get involved much in the build-up play, and then just bangs them in, you know. I mean, yeah, this is very much a stylistic view of it, but yeah, I think we're playing the best football in the league anyway.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I want to talk a little bit about the North London Derby. I haven't got the graphic because of my own fault. I couldn't format what we were trying to format in the build-up to this show, and we just ran out of time. But you mentioned a little bit earlier on about the possession winning line in comparison to where it was last season. Now, you also highlighted to me the average team shape. And actually, that's not that different from what it was last season, which shows that, you know, the foundations for this style of play were there, but we just didn't have the personnel.
Yeah.
You mentioned Cedric, you mentioned Holding played that day. Mohamed Elneny was in midfield instead of Thomas Partey, which plays a massive part as well. But just talk to us a little bit about this possession winning line,
how much
further up the pitch it is, and how that signifies that Arsenal are much braver and bolder, I guess, in their approach.
Yeah, so in the North London Derby last year, which was horrible, as you can remember, Harry.
I remember well.
we got battered, didn't we, really? It wasn't even a contest. So in that game, our possession winning line was 27 meters from goal, which, to give you a bit of perspective, it's sort of like a few meters outside of the D. So, you know, that's, you know, you're winning possession quite deep into your half. I don't remember winning much possession that game anyway. they battered us all over the park. But that's 27 meters, and you switch it on to the one that we just had, and it's 37 meters. So it's a whole, you know, 10 meters up the pitch. And just, I've got the graphic in front of me. I'll try and explain it as best as possible. But, you know, you move all the way through the center of our half, let's just say, and you're actually near the semicircle line of the middle of the pitch. So if you think about that, going from the edge of the D to the center, so that's huge. And what I noticed really, what really helped us in that derby, and as I mentioned earlier, we stationed Saliba and Gabriel basically, you know, I'm talking about the edge of the semicircles, basically on the halfway line. And you're telling them, you know, win your duels against Harry Kane, which is extremely difficult because he's one of the best strikers in the world. And I would say with his back to goal, he's probably the best, because the way he can just get the ball down, immaculate first touch, you know, a few touches out of his feet and either spring a pass or, you know, make a run. He's one of the best. So for Gabriel and Saliba to, you know, be so brave to the point where they would push all the way up to basically the halfway line to attempt to win the ball, which is a high risk strategy, as we know. It just shows you the confidence that they have in terms of their own ability, in terms of the ability of their teammates to cover them if they're not successful in that tackle. And the confidence, like, you know, they're going to White Hart Lane, which is, not White Hart Lane, the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. The swamp, yeah, the bog, whatever you want to call it, the toilet bowl, whatever. There's lots of names for it these days. But you're going there, you know, it's a horrible environment. You know, you've got the scars of last season fresh in your mind. So to play that way, especially for the defense, is really brave. But it just, what it does is squeezes the pitch and it allows you to build your attacks that much quicker. So within about three or four passes, you know, we're in on their defense, and you potentially got a one-on-one with Saka with whoever it was playing left back, Sessegnon, and you know, you're in basically. So yeah, it's a huge difference. Massive.
It's massive because if you want to press aggressively and you want to be able to sustain it for 90 minutes, you have to shrink the size of the area that you're required to do it in. If you're trying to press across the full entirety of a pitch, it's too much distance, it's too much legwork, and you'll run out of steam very quickly. So one of the fundamentals behind playing a good pressing game is being able to limit the game into one area of the park. So if you can squeeze their opponent into their half and you're only then required to cover the ground and distance of a half, that's a much easier task than trying to press right across the football pitch. And where teams fail in pressing, and where Unai Emery used to fail in the pressing game, was he would make his forward line do it, and that was great. But if it wasn't backed up by the midfield and then by a defence that was comfortable and confident in squeezing up the pitch, then the distances between the lines of your team were too great. And you mentioned, you referenced the centre-backs previously. You dropped the ball over Per Mertesacker, for example. It was panic stations. His first thought is, shit, I'm not catching you. What am I going to do? I'm probably going to have to take you out. Whereas, and that's not to dig out Per Mertesacker, by the way, because I think considering his lack of pace, he was quite a good centre-back. But the point I'm trying to make is that you need centre-backs that when you do drop a ball over the top of them, will go, won't panic. They'll go, okay, cool, I'll turn around and I'll sprint back towards my own goal. And what you see in Gabriel and in Saliba is two players that are really comfortable within their own skin when it comes to turning and sprinting back to their goal, because they know they can cover the ground. They know they can cover the distance. And that has obviously been key in us adapting and changing our style of play. So it's a really, really important point. Just quickly before we continue, Damien says, Harry, why this now when we're all out here sweating on a midfield transfer signing and you're out here reviewing the season? We're not reviewing the season. We're taking stock of the season so far and Arsenal's progress so far, because we're at the halfway point. I think it's a great milestone upon which to look back at what we've done this season and what's been different. People want to see a midfielder come in. Absolutely. So do I. But Edu's not going to stop working behind the scenes because Harry and Mike are having a chat about Arsenal's season so far. Edu's not going to, you know, say, hold on a minute, guys, I'm in negotiations with Brighton over Caicedo. I'll tell you what, mate, I'll call you back because I just need to listen to Harry and Mike's season review. It's not that deep, man. It's honestly not that deep. And I don't understand this whole thing. Like, we're fucking top of the league, yeah? We got 50 points on the board. And there are Arsenal fans out there that still want to find any excuse to whinge and moan about, you know, what Arsenal have achieved so far and where they currently find themselves. Give it a rest, Damien. Have a day off, mate. Have a day off, seriously. let's talk Zinchenko and Tierney, because that too has made a massive difference. Now, I was having a chat on yesterday's show with Nicole about the Zinchenko-Tierney thing. I've seen a lot of people suggesting this week that maybe Kieran Tierney's time at Arsenal is done. I don't really see it like that, but it's clear that with Zinchenko coming in, there are a lot of things that Kieran Tierney maybe wasn't bringing us and wasn't bringing to the table that we just maybe didn't realize. It's almost like if you don't know that you can do better, then that's a horrible way of putting it. I'm not shitting on Kieran Tierney, but the point I'm trying to make is that Zinchenko has added more, hasn't he? And that's highlighted in his positional play and in his touch maps.
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted it the other day, like Zinchenko's touch map from the North London derby. From the Manchester United. You know what? We've been winning so many big games, it all just blurs into one, Harry. We've been battering whoever comes in front of us. It's just like trying to think back to a game where Arsenal battered a big opponent is really hard, because it's like we've beaten everyone this season, haven't we? Zinchenko's touch map in the game against Man United was unbelievable. He's popping up in his own box, in central midfield, in right wing, in, you know, left wing, left back, every position conceivable except goal. And he really just does add so much. And but that's not to say that Kieran Tierney's done. I don't necessarily think he's done, because with the signing of Trossard, I get a sense that he likes to play centrally a bit more. He's way more of an inside forward than a winger, I think. And so you need different profiles, don't you? There's going to be games where in the Europa League this season, maybe in the Champions League next season, where we need to switch things up and things might not be working. And you say, okay, well, let's start a game with, you know, not Zinchenko and Martinelli, where Zinchenko will basically play in central midfield and Martinelli will play on the touchline. Let's play Kieran Tierney, who we know can bomb him up the left, and let's play inside him Trossard. So you're just basically flipping it. And yes, you do lose something because you don't have that central midfield addition. But, you know, maybe you drop Xhaka in a bit deeper and say, you know, you do the role that Zinchenko does. So you need different options. It's not just like, okay, we've got this style of play now where Zinchenko plays as a central midfielder and that's the only, you know, thing that we can do. We can change it, can't we?
Yeah, and there will be games where, as you say, you know, you... Like, I always look at Kieran Tierney and think, if I were wanting to put one of him or Zinchenko in a one-on-one situation against an elite winger, because, and you know, you come up against someone that makes you worry a little bit about your own game and your own style to the point where you're willing to make adaptations to live with them, I would trust Kieran Tierney in a one-on-one defensive situation more than Zinchenko. So it's about weighing up what you need for what game. I think generally speaking, Zinchenko brings more to the table. And generally speaking, he will be the left back moving forward. But that doesn't mean that Kieran Tierney doesn't have a role in this squad and should be cast aside. I think Kieran Tierney was someone who had impressed at points, but obviously had a really dodgy injury record. And that injury record, I think, probably caused Arsenal as a football club to start to lose a bit of trust in him, not in his ability, but in his availability. And as a consequence of that, they felt that they could go out and get someone in who would help there. But obviously what they've seen from Zinchenko has been amazing. I mean, I don't know if you read that story yesterday about Zinchenko. Obviously, we talk about his leadership all the time and, you know, the way he sort of really puts his arm around people and sort of drives that mentality that we're seeing at the moment. Did you see the story about Jakub Kivior, who was obviously in the stands against Manchester United? Zinchenko spotted him, apparently, behind the scenes, and went and grabbed him and dragged him into the changing room and said something along the lines of, you know, if you're going to be with us, you're with us now, and sort of bringing him in so he could kind of feel the whole, you know, the whole mood around the place at the moment and where we're at, which is, that's the kind of thing that, you know, people used to say Kieran Tierney should be the captain, Odegaard shouldn't get it. Kieran Tierney is a leader in his own right, but Zinchenko for me is taking it to a totally new level. And, you know, he doesn't need to wear the armband. Martin Odegaard wears the armband, but now you've got Zinchenko, you've got Xhaka, you've got even, you could say, Saka, you know, the way he leads Jesus when he's on the pitch, being an experienced player. There's so many people in that group now that you can turn to and look to for leadership. I also want to talk on Gabriel, again, another player that you highlighted, because he has been, a lot of people at the start of the season were almost blinded by William Saliba's brilliant performances and almost forgot, I think, how good Gabriel has been and can be. Post-World Cup, Gabriel, for me, has certainly been the better of the two. It's not, again, not William Saliba, but, I mean, just look at the duels he's winning and the solidarity he brings us. How important is it that we have him firing as well?
Yeah, huge. And I think we sort of forget he's still, like, not an old player. Is he 25, maybe? 24, 25? Possibly 26?
20.
Yeah,
I will check now, but it's definitely 25 or 26. Hold on.
Yeah, yeah. So he's not like, you know, a super. He's not like a Thiago Silva, where he's got all this experience. He's won loads of things. Yeah, he's not at that level. I mean, he didn't get into the Brazil squad, right? So that just shows you not only the level of competition at centre back for Brazil, but I mean, yeah, he's not really at that level yet where he's, you know, an elite defender. But I think what he is that he takes full responsibility. And I think really he's dragged Saliba through these last few weeks. And Saliba has started to get better, but I think we both picked it out that after the World Cup, his form dropped off a cliff and he just didn't look right. He wasn't quite there. He wasn't quite the races, basically. He didn't have the sharpness, the speed, the sort of, you know, the way he glides across the pitch wasn't really there. So I think Gabriel has proved his importance even more so. But you're right, there was a period early in the season where Gabriel was dropping a few clangers and, you know, he's human. It's going to happen. His performances can't always be a 10 out of 10. But I think what he does have now, he's got that sort of standing in the Arsenal team. He's got that leadership ability and he's got the presence that, you know, looking at Jules in the North London derby, and as I mentioned earlier, he was, you know, battering Harry Kane, one of the best strikers in the world, like with full confidence, like not giving him an inch. Harry Kane didn't have anything in that game, pretty much, apart from that header and maybe a chance in the second half, but he was limited to barely anything, and he did pull more towards Gabriel's side. So yeah, I mean, he's a huge player for us, man, and it was important because he almost went to Man United, didn't he? It was he had to choose between us and Man United, and we got him, luckily. But yeah, it could have been a whole different story, couldn't it?
Indeed. Just quickly, if you haven't left a like on the video, what on earth are you waiting for? There's plenty of you with us live right now. Nowhere near enough likes on the board. So please leave a like. Smash it. Exactly. If you want access to our premium content, the next piece of which is coming to you guys tonight, After the FA Cup tie with Manchester City, I'll be dropping some player ratings from the Etihad Stadium. Then please do visit the link in the description. Sign up on Another Slice, create your account, download the app. Or if you prefer, you can take the RSS feed, the custom RSS feed, and plug it into whichever podcast app you prefer. But yeah, we really appreciate the support. And you're not just supporting the podcast, you're supporting the Great Ormond Street Children's Hospital as well, who we are donating to regularly from the membership pot. So thank you for that. Mike, Gabriel Jesus, speaking of Gabriels, what has he added to the front line that Alexander Lacazette couldn't, basically?
Well, I think he's added a whole bunch. And we've spoken a lot of times on this podcast, Harry, about not having a complete number nine that could do it all. When we had Aubameyang and Lacazette, we had a player who was really good at finishing. Not really good, but good at finishing in Aubameyang. He did, you know, he didn't always find the back of the net, but good in finishing. Got in the box, a bit of a poacher. And then we had Lacazette, who could do the sort of other side of the game. I think Jesus can do both. I know his goal scoring did drop off a little bit, but just I've got the stats in front of me comparing Lacazette to Jesus, and I'll read them out for you now. So looking at Lacazette last season, 21-22, 30 games played, 2 goals excluding penalties, 7 assists, 2 goals in a whole season, 30 games. And then obviously Jesus this season, 14 games played, 5 goals, 5 assists. I mean, it just shows you the sort of difference there. And obviously, just looking at other stats as well, dribbles completed Lacazette for the whole of last season, 19. Dribbles completed for Jesus, 27. And that's in, you know, less than half of the games. Aerial duels is more. Gabriel Jesus got 24 in 14 games compared to Lacazette, who has had 21 last season. So, you know, these are huge, huge metrics. And we're comparing players, you know, one who was the main striker for a whole season and the other who just came in, bear in mind, you know, is that there'd be a period of adjustment to his new teammates and all of that sort of stuff. And he's smashing it, basically. And we pointed out at the beginning of the season, you know, how influential he's been. And, you know, touches in the box as well. I don't have that stat in front of me, but I can guarantee you it would be way more than Lacazette would have. And yeah, I think as well, an important thing to touch on is not just like the technical aspects, but you know, the mentality with him and Zinchenko, it's just lifted everyone.
Yeah, it has indeed. My kind of quick 2 pence on those stats that you just mentioned. The dribbling thing, I think, is huge. Because what that does, you know, sometimes you see Gabriel Jesus receive the ball deep inside the opposition half, or sometimes he comes even a bit shorter. But once he gets it, he's got this amazing ability to just pop it left or right and turn. And once he turns and starts running at a defense, panic stations kick in. And you see that from our opposition, and you see them swarm around him and try to dispossess him as quickly as possible from fear of what he might do. But in attracting and absorbing the attention of all of the defenders, he then creates space in the wide areas for Saka, for Martinelli, for Xhaka if he comes up in that half space, for Odegaard on the other side. And he's so good at dribbling, but also knowing when the moment comes where it's kind of like, well, I'm going to lose it now, so I need to pop it off left or right. He's so good at doing that and absorbing the attention of defenses. So I think that's key. You mentioned the aerial duels. Again, massive. He's not a bigger guy than Alexander Lacazette, but you can play the ball long to him and you know he's going to give the defender a difficult time. I remember that the game that sticks out to me in that sense this season was the defeat at Old Trafford, where we were playing balls sometimes from Ramsdale up towards him and he would just give the Manchester United centre-halves a real problem in terms of like the way he would sort of use his body. He uses his body brilliantly, doesn't he?
Yeah. I've got just a button. Sorry, Harry. I've got a Jesus aerial memory as well. It's the only game I've actually been able to go to this season at home to Leicester. And that was his first home game. And there was a moment where I think he was on a hat trick because he scored twice that game. And there's a long ball from Ramsdale. And he's headed the ball up in the air. And he's bodied Johnny Evans while the ball is in the air, brought it down, turned him, and then, you know, the goalkeeper saved it. But, you know, that would have been unbelievable. And for him to do that at his size, you know, obviously he's got great core strength, but he's not a big guy, is he? Like, he's still very agile. For him to be able to do that is just unbelievable. And it's something that none of our strikers of the past, you know, the past 4 or 5 seasons would have been able to do. It's just, yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, for sure. Totally agree. You know, you highlighted the goal scoring stats as well. And obviously he's already contributed more than Lacazette did last season, but it's so much bigger than that for me. You know, outside of the goal scoring, it's all the things that you've mentioned. It's the ability to have someone that, you know, can challenge in the air, even if he doesn't win it every time, but you know that you can play that there and hope that he's involved or he's going to buy you a bit of time. The other thing as well, I think, which is really key, and you touched on mentality, is how that's improved those around him. Because I think it has. I think it's improved Martinelli. I think it's improved Saka. But perhaps more significantly than any of those two, it's improved Eddie Nketiah. Because I've said this time and time again on this show, I'll just briefly repeat it. We knew that the injury to Jesus had been suffered. We knew it during the World Cup. And we had some time out in Dubai to kind of get Eddie Nketiah up to speed. And what Arsenal have done is tried to coach some Jesus into Nketiah, the dribbling. You're seeing, if you look at the stats for dribbles attempted with Eddie Nketiah and you compare it to where he was at maybe a year ago, you can see that he does that a lot more. You can see that he's built confidence in doing that. You can see that he uses his body a lot better. And you can see that his link-up play outside of the penalty area is a lot more lively than what it was before. I'd always look at Eddie before and say he's a penalty box player. But outside of that, he didn't offer an awful lot. But he's obviously had some Jesus coached into him. And ultimately, that comes from training with him day in, day out. That comes from the coaching staff watching Jesus, learning from him, identifying, understanding what it is that's so effective about him, and then trying to put that onto Eddie Nketiah as well. So I think, as Mikey points out in the chat, I think he puts this perfectly, his very presence cannot be underestimated. Just quickly before we bid farewell, the average ages of the squad, I mean, it's much younger. And I keep talking about this, Mike, but it is something that needed to happen, isn't it? It's something that if we were going to get this investment that we've obviously had in recent times, we needed to make it the type of investment that would go far, i.e. get players in that have sell on value. And obviously age is a big part of that, but also build the type of squad that you can keep together for 5-6 seasons. Yeah, there will be some additions along the way, but if you're going to go that big, you need to be doing it with a sort of, and building a squad that is ultimately going to be sustainable for a period of time. Because this money that we've spent, we're not going to be able to keep on spending that. I honestly believe that. There will come a point where we'll do a bit of a Liverpool and go, we've got our squad now. Now it's about making one or two additions. And that point doesn't feel too far away anymore.
Yeah, no, I'll quickly run you through those stats. So I was just comparing it to, so the Arsenal squad in 2021 had an average age of 25.7. I don't know how you can be 0.7 years old, but that's just an average number. But
that was, I guess,
yeah, that left us fifth in the sort of rankings of clubs. Villa were top, Fulham, Man United, Wolves, and then Arsenal. And then fast forward to this season, we're top, so we're the youngest squad, and the average age has dropped from 25.7 to 24.1. The slight caveat is that we've used less players. Our squad is a bit smaller than it was, but still, you know, we're 24.1 now, ahead of Southampton, second Leeds, Brentford, and Nottingham Forest. So, interestingly, none of the other top six are in that top five, which it just shows you how impressive it is what we're doing. You know, yeah, we're not competing against the teams that I've just read out. So the fact that we are there, you know, along with Southampton and a Forest are way down at the bottom, and we're top of the table, it's incredible. But it's a huge shout out to not only the faith that the Mikel Arteta has had in our academy players, but it's, you know, it's the academy who keep pumping out player after player after player, and keep bringing them through. And it will be interesting to see who the next one is. And, you know, might it be Charlie Patino I don't know, might it be Brooke Norton Coffee? I don't know. There's a few options there, and I really hope that we give them a chance. I guess I mentioned this on the last pod I did, Harry, but I hope that trend continues when we get into the Champions League and we don't just forget about, you know, bringing through these younger players. I hope they really do get a chance, whether that's in the FA Cup or the League Cup, to continue the excellent work that we've been doing.
Yeah, for sure. Totally agree. We are going to have to leave it there because we're both pressed for time. Someone mentioned in the chat, when are we going to talk about Mr. Consistent Ben White? He's been fantastic, but so have so many others. Odegaard, yeah. Saka, Martinelli. You know, we could sit here and talk about them all day. That's why we had to kind of limit it down to sort of areas in which we feel that the team has really made progress. And we've talked a lot about the team as a collective, more so than individuals, but maybe we can do some additional shows sort of focusing on individuals and their sort of journeys as well. But thank you to everybody for tuning in. As always, don't forget to leave a like, don't forget to subscribe. We're around about 40 odd subscribers away from hitting 26,000 on our YouTube channel, so that is growing all the time. If you could help us reach that milestone sooner rather than later, I'd be very, very grateful. If you want some content around the Manchester City game, which takes place tonight at the time of recording, go back on the channel. It's the last video. If you're listening on audio, it's the last episode in your feeds. From me and DJ Khaled over there, thank you all so, so much. We'll see you next time. Until then, goodbye.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.